Good morning. It is Sunday, April the 14th, 2019, and this is your friend Dan in Little Saigon. I think I've decided to sort of do a little bit of potpourri when it comes to these podcasts for a while. Not because I can't stay on topic, but because I'm kind of in a weird place. I just started a new job. If you've been a long-time listener, short-time focuser, whatever. If you've been listening to my own situation, you've known that I've been, bottom bouncing along the path of least resistance that leads to homelessness for a few months now, and I may have bounced my way out of that local minima, in mathematical terms, into a new local maxima slash minima that might be hyper-stable to some extent, with strange attractors pointing towards personal wealth gain, and maybe even paying off of debts, which I really don't want to do because I simply hate the credit card companies and the banks, but I might even have to do that. So yeah, I just started a job and it's great. But it's a job, and it's what it is. Working for a company, I don't really love the company, but it's, I was walking across the campus of this company the other day, and if you want to know why I'm calling it this company and not naming it, it's in part because I don't want to jinx this. I need this job. But yeah, I'm walking across the campus of this company, and the thing is, this company is so big that it more or less consumes a whole town. So I'm walking across the campus. And this particular company has like 50 cafeterias, and I should say 50 different restaurants. And I just ate my breakfast at one of its 50 corporate restaurants, and I just realized, a lot of people here, they're just okay and happy with it. They don't want to know what's going on. They don't want to know that their reality is not hyper stable. It's not super safe. They don't want to know that their reality depends upon a few variables that can switch on them at any time, and all of a sudden, all this shit, all this wonderful, magical, Willy Wonka fucking smart device bullshit comes crumbling down. They just want to walk across the campus. They just want to play in the company soccer field. This company is so big it has soccer fields, plural. Yeah, so I was walking across the campus of this particular corporation that I am currently working for as a contractor, and I realized that, Dan, you probably are right about all this bullshit, but these people just want to be happy. And I don't want to oversimplify, but that's kind of where I'm at. So anyways, if this is a potpourri of subjects, fine. That's fine. I don't know what to tell you. I was thinking the other day that when you reach this point in your life, the point I'm at, that to some extent, it's almost as if every part of you gets replaced. Like, when you're young, you have certain parts, that make you like a human. But when you get old, it just seems like all those parts that make you human, they just get replaced with like sawdust and broken glass and a chunk of rock or riprap or concrete where your heart used to be. And that's what happens to you. It's like when you're young, you have a body and you have flesh and blood and you have spirit and there's hope. And maybe you're not doomed. Maybe you won't just end up a meat sandwich. But when you're old, you're just sawdust and broken glass. And probably some rock you found by the wayside where your heart used to be. And I thought that was a really happy thought. It occurred to me on the bus. And let me talk about the bus for a moment. So I was on the bus the other day, the metro, taking the bus to my magical Willy Wonka job in the Willy Wonka land of magical people staring at their smart devices. And I was taking the bus home, actually. So I wasn't going to, I was going away. It was the end of day, and I was getting on the 545. I just gave you a bit of a clue. So I was getting on the 545, heading home, heading back to downtown Seattle to Little Saigon. And, you know, the 545 bus, which I think I may have been getting on the bus at 5:45 p.m. You know, think of that kind of bullshit. So I was getting on the 545 at 5:45 p.m. And, yeah. The bus is pretty packed. Like, it's just, you know, a lot of people. It's not Friday afternoon. Friday afternoon, this bus is not so packed. Mental note for the future. You don't need to worry about when you catch it because you're going to find some empty seats. But any other day of the week, this bus is very packed around 5:45 p.m. if you take the 5:45 to go downtown. Anywho, it's pretty packed, and this one dude who, again, I'm making the assumption, but I think there's an 85% chance he works for the same company. Again, that's how big this company is. You get on a bus at this particular bus stop, and I think it's 85% to 100% true that they either work for the company as permanent employees or they're a contractor working for the company. But anyways, this one dude is squished onto the bus. I'm in the aisle standing there. In the aisle on the bus because there's no place to sit down. Very, very packed. And this one dude, who I think is on the spectrum, and when I say on the spectrum, some of you know what I mean. It's the autistic spectrum. It's the, yeah, it's the crap and the water and the food. And this one dude on the spectrum who's kind of dressed like, I don't know. He's dressed strangely. He's got on these heavy winter gloves and this trench coat, and you don't see people sporting trench coats much these days. But he's got on a trench coat, and he's got on some kind of a hat, and he's really upset that we're not squished far enough. Like, he was convinced that there's 8 to 12 inches behind us, that if we all just squished ourselves more people, maybe 3 or 4 people could get packed on the bus. He was very upset about this. He started screaming to the back of the bus, you know, move back, move back. He was convinced that there was 8 to 12 inches. I think that there was probably 8 to 12 inches. There could have been 24 inches. I mean, people in general, if they can avoid it, don't want to be smushed up against each other. I'm kind of the non-Japanese perspective on this one. If you're thinking we should pack as many sardines into the can as possible, I think you're an asshole. On the other hand, he does have an argument. You know, there might have been enough space for 2 or 3 or maybe even, dare I say, 4 people to squeeze their fucking asses onto that metro bus. He was upset. There were a couple incidents. Like, essentially, there was one incident where we stopped and a woman and her child wanted to get on the bus, and he looks behind and he stares at all of us with that evil fucking, I'm on the spectrum with autism, Asperger's, I probably write machine code for real-time devices stare of a Microsoft, of a fucking engineer whose brain has been addled by years of staring at fucking code. He glares at us. What the fuck? So yes, 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 and yes. This particular gentleman was convinced that there was, you know, a foot, maybe 2 feet of space that we could have squeezed the mother and the child on. I, for one, if I had been the mom, I would have said, we'll wait for the next bus. There's one every 15 minutes. And I don't know. I don't know why I mentioned that story. But again, I said a potpourri. I said a potpourri. There are many topics. There are many Poes and a potpourri. And there are many topics in the podcasts I do when I'm stressed out about whether or not I'm doing a job where I'll end up going crazy in 3 weeks and yelling at somebody because everyone is crazy. And I don't know. A number of years ago, I would have told you that I was ahead of my time, like I was totally okay, that I've accepted, that I was in acceptance. You know, the whole Kubler-Ross process, denial, anger, bargaining, you know, depression and acceptance. I would have argued a few years ago that I got through the denial, got through the anger, got through the bargaining, got depressed and then accepted my situation, you know? You know, it's funny, I've been talking about Guy McPherson and Dane Wigington on my podcasts, but the reality is that even though my view of the future is not as dire as Guy McPherson or Dane Wigington, I do have a pretty dim view of the near future. I did a set of estimates a number of years ago I called the napkin estimates, and I'll probably post a link to that PDF in this little podcast, you know, informational zone that will probably show up on the SoundCloud app, maybe, but I'll post a link to that PDF. But I did my own estimates of the future back in 2015, I think. And I came to some pretty startling, ugly conclusions just based upon thinking about the world logically, given the things I believe are true. You know, I do not believe the government is hiding super magical energy technology. I don't believe the oil companies are hiding super magical energy technology. However, if they are, then a lot of my assumptions about the future turn out to be false. You know, I think it's an interesting but true but important fact. If you can solve the energy problem, almost every single other problem has a solution. It might be expensive, but it's only expensive relative to energy. So that's the thing. If you can solve the energy problem, if you can come up with a way to produce energy so cheaply, that just about anything is possible and energy becomes essentially free, then, for example, recycling. Recycling's hard because it's really about the laws of thermodynamics and entropy. So it takes energy to produce something. It also takes energy to tear something apart. But if energy were cheap enough, you could build something like a plasma centrifuge and just dump garbage into it. And you could tear it apart and you would have zero externalities, no pollution. Every single molecule, every atom could be torn apart. Would it still be an inherently lossy process? Of course, there's no free lunch. But if energy were essentially free, you can do shit like that. Anyways, I don't know. I this whole thing about the darkness of the future is fine. But it is one of those situations where you kind of have to step back. It's like what I was saying about Microsoft Campus. Oh, fuck. Like I was saying about that place I work right now. It's a magical fantasy land. It really is. It's kind of a Willy Wonka paradise for the young techno freaks. And God bless them because they seem happy. And I don't want to take away their happiness. That's actually the truth. Even if impending doom is right around the corner, I figure they deserve at least one or two more days of happiness before they get all sad about shit. But I really did. I used to say to myself, Dan, at least you've been through the process. You've accepted your situation. But actually, I don't know if that's true. I don't know if I am Mr. Acceptance. I just don't know. I know that I'm probably more sawdust and broken glass now than anything else inside. And I think that's probably what growing old means, is you replace what's human with sawdust and broken glass and riprap and chunks of rebar and regret. And you stuff it all inside and you sew it up, and that's you. That's a person now. Fuck. Anyways, I don't think I'm killing it on these topics. I was going to talk about... I had this weird idea, like, wouldn't it be great to have... Well, okay, so this dude I work with at work, and so I don't know if I should go too far into this. This dude I just met at my job, he seems okay, but I was way too honest with him. So, you know, I just couldn't keep my mouth shut the first few days. I was so nervous. I actually ended up bringing up the subject of the car rapist. Like, I shouldn't have mentioned the fact that I saw a homeless person last Saturday sexually assaulting a Toyota Prius, but I did. I mentioned it, like, on day two. It's like, I've seen some weird things, and we were all talking about Seattle, and it says, listen, there's stuff you see, and you can't unsee it. And why did I mention it? It's like I'm trying to set myself up as the weirdo. Fuck. But so far, so good. The people there seem okay. I don't know. So I was talking to a dude who happens to take the same bus now as I do because he just moved downtown. So he gets on the bus and it's like, hell, we're on the same team and we're going to the same bus stop. So why not just talk to each other? Big fucking mistake. He seemed like he is a nice guy. That's not the issue. Very nice person. Very nice person to talk to. But the problem was, is I said too much. I was too honest. I said too much about who I was. And then at one point he says, well, you know, you should be a politician, Dan, because you're such a, you know, you're such a good communicator. And it was like, no. But it did make me think about, well, why don't I have a gimmick? Because lots of people are making money from gimmicks. Like, even quote-unquote Christians, like, I am a Christian. I consider myself a Christian, no asterisk, don't want to explain what that means, I am a Christian. But there are Christians, if you turn on the TV set, even now, even with digital broadcasts, if you turn on the channel 27.2, it's out there now. I'm just kidding, I don't know if it's 27.2 where you live. But there's always a channel where there's a religious dude on, and that's the religious dude that's selling you the max wealth expansion program. Like, if you believe in BMW Jesus, if you can have faith in BMW Jesus or Rolls-Royce Jesus, you know, Cadillac Jesus, I think that'd be a good one. If you can simply find your, and if you want to know what I'm drinking, it's coffee, it's early in the morning, it's Sunday. I might skip church today. I haven't decided yet. I've got some mixed feelings. I think my sister would be really upset with me if I did, but maybe not that upset. I don't know. I told myself a few weeks ago that everybody can go to church, that even if you're having a bad day, you can still go to church, that even if you're in a shitty mood, you can still go to church, or even if you're just gobsmacked. Like right now, I'm simply in a weird place. I should wash clothes, but I'm probably going to do my bachelor male life don't matter so I don't care type of requeuing system with the dirty underwear and socks this week, because that's where I'm at about the whole clothes thing. I should wash clothes this weekend, but instead I'm going to reprioritize my underwear from the dirty clothes stack and see if any of it can pass for a second run, if you know what I mean. And I know that's whatever, that's TMI, so fuck you. But yeah, why don't I have that expansionary program? Like, a number of years ago, and I think I have a video on my website pointing to it, but there was Power Manium Focus. And Power Manium Focus could have been the next level, how do you improve your health and well-being and your stature and make sure your kids get into college and get that promotion at work? How do you regrow your hair? Like, Power Manium Focus was going to be my expansionary multi-level pyramid positive program involving nutrient drinks and all kinds of other bullshit. I could have done that. I could have fucking been selling the, I could have been selling people on selling my nutrient drinks. Now, of course, the question that comes to mind is, Dan, what goes into your nutrient drinks? And, you know, I think, I don't know. I don't know if you want to know that. But why don't I have a max expansionary BMW Jesus program? I should. If I did, I'd probably be rich. I'd probably have 50 French Bulldogs. I would have so many French Bulldogs. I could afford so many French Bulldogs, I could build a trebuchet. And for those of you who don't know what a trebuchet is, it's essentially a kind of siege weapon, like a catapult, but instead of working off the basis of stored torsion energy, which is essentially how catapults and crossbows and the bow and arrow work, it uses essentially stored potential energy through a pivot or a swing. Anywho, with a trebuchet, you can hurl rocks, or better yet, if you're super rich and you have a BMW Jesus Power expansionary program that's making everybody nutrient drink rich, then you can afford a trebuchet for launching French Bulldogs. Like, I would have that. I would have these dystopian parties where everyone's dressed in tuxedos and women are dressed in beautiful gowns, and we're launching. And I have this wonderful pasture land, you know, somewhere in Kentucky or Yakima. and probably Eastern Washington, not Kentucky, and we would be launching French bulldogs with a trebuchet, like maybe 1,000 feet or more. And they would impact the ground so far away that the horror, the true horror of a French bulldog hitting the ground and not being able, with its stubby little feet and its smashed up little face, to save itself. All it can do is maybe go rah, rah, right before it dies, and that's it. And you could say, well, Dan, that's mean-spirited. You want to hurl French bulldogs. And I would say to you, it was more mean-spirited for the first person to breed a French bulldog. That was the great sin. The great sin was to usher into the world the stubby, slabby, clabby, crabby little creature with the smushed up face and all of the issues it has, and all it wants to do is vomit and eat its vomit and poo and eat its poo, and then vomit up its poo and eat its poo again. That is a French bulldog. Yeah. So no, I don't have a BMW Jesus expansionary program. But I'll tell you this much. If I wanted to be a total crooked preacher, I think I could pull it off. I think I could have a 2 a.m. channel. I think all the old people who are on 50 medications who can't sleep would be watching. And, I'd be like, listen, you want to go to heaven? You want your grandkids, you want your great grandchildren to get into college next year? You need to send me money. I've got the BMW Jesus. He's on the other line. But the only way you get his help is by sending me cash. Now, the good news about the church I attend is it's not a BMW expansionary cash program, Jesus. It's actually just a good Christian church. But I don't know. I don't know if it was mass last week. I think it could have been, I think it was a couple weeks ago. But at mass, not mass, I can't believe I just said mass. That's the papist in me. I was raised Catholic. I just said mass. At services a couple weeks ago, the church accountant or comptroller gave a briefing of the status of the church. Now, I gotta say, that's kind of good information. If you're gonna join a church, it's kind of cool that they're transparent about their books. I mean, I don't know if I want to see the sausage, made at church while we're at church, but I get it, and it kind of makes sense. But again, it was kind of cool. It's like it wasn't about so much having a BMW Jesus as just being able to pay off the debts to the banks. And it's like, holy fuck. That's good news. Paying off the banks. The banks aren't great. They're terrible. Probably the devil runs most of the banks. So good thing paying off the banks. Anyways, this next little topic is sort of related to artificial intelligence, and it's not. I was at lunch the other day talking to people, probably saying things I shouldn't say, given the nature of the job I have now, working for a company that shepherds the techno freaks of the dying era. And I was at lunch, and we were talking about shit. And I said, a lot of people, they fear the robot apocalypse, because they imagine this kind of Terminator scenario. Like, in the robot apocalypse, there's going to be fucking giant robots with giant laser cannons just snuffing people out. And guess what? It could be like that. It could be like that, the opening fucking 30 minutes of, Tom Cruise Spielberg's 2005 epic flick remake of an H.G. Wells story, War of the Worlds. It could be like that. It could be just these machines, they rise up and they just start snuffing us out. But what if it's not like that? What if it's smarter than that? Because if you ask me, if the machines are as smart as they say they're going to get, it would seem really stupid and kind of type A to build a bunch of fucking robots. In reality, all they would really need to do is control shipping and delivery. I mean, think about the Amazon shit or the delivery of pharmaceuticals. I mean, or even things like Amazon Fresh or any of the other food delivery services. If it became 100% automated, how hard would it be for the machine to simply, poison us. I mean, to simply put poison into the drugs and to cover the toys in a poisonous residue and to put poison on the food. I mean, really, this whole machine apocalypse thing could happen in a 24 to 72 hour window based upon, you know, whether or not Prime, Amazon Prime delivers on time. That's could be the robot apocalypse. People have become so dependent upon their technology. They've become so dependent upon these systems that really a brilliant, genius, evil machine, it wouldn't waste any fucking time building fucking robots. It would simply take over delivery and logistics and say, oh yeah, everyone's getting a delivery. Oh, Friday the 13th. And you know what? It might have a sense of humor and it might pick a Friday the 13th. And those of us Luddites, those of us, you know, weirdos that live in the outer zone who consume the Gumbus grease and the Klimbly and the Shimbly and the stuff that gathers by the wayside and scoop it up as if pulling into themselves a chunk of organic sludge and shove it down our mouthpipes. For those of us who live off of the residue of the residue of the splinter that comes out of the moculus, for those of us who are not getting Amazon Prime deliveries, yeah, we might survive day zero. But I'll tell you what, at that point, really, does the fucking superintelligence care? There might be, I don't know, after it's all over, there might be a few million of us left. After all the nuclear reactors cook off, after all the shit's done, there might be a few million left. Will they care? I don't know. But then okay, maybe the robot builds the machines for hunting humans. Then okay, I get that. And maybe it will be just a nuclear war. I mean, I guess that kind of makes sense too. But still, that's a waste of a lot of stuff. So I think phase one for the robot apocalypse is going to be something like food delivery, pharmaceutical delivery. Could even be a designer virus that just. It's 100% lethal, but maybe it takes 5 years to even have its first symptoms show up. And then it just delivers the virus through Amazon Fresh all around the world, and everyone gets infected because they're all like fucking whatever. And then, yeah, we're all dead. I don't know. That's awfully dark for a Sunday, and yes, I should go to church. Not at 4 a.m. It's 4 a.m. right now. Nobody should go to church at 4 a.m., but I should probably go to church today. I don't know. I wonder if there is a church that has services at 4 a.m. That would be awfully early. That would be awfully early, and one would have to wonder about church services starting at 4. It's entirely plausible that in the military, there are chaplains that will periodically, you know, hold services this early. I can't imagine. I do know that that's a possibility. But other than the military in a war zone, who's holding services at 4 a.m.? Nobody. Maybe some crazy preacher in the inner city someplace, but yeah. So yeah, the robot apocalypse. But the other thing about the robot apocalypse is this, and this is the other thing too, and this is the part that I don't know. I know that not everybody is wise enough to achieve a kind of notion that human liberty is absolutely important and critical, and that the only proper stance towards society is anarchism. I know not all of you are that enlightened yet, but many of you do believe in liberty. You give it lip service. You'll say, I'm a small government Republican, Dan. I'm a libertarian. I just want small government. You just want to put the crocodile on a diet. I get it. But what if the robot apocalypse happened when the first government came along? I mean, I've talked about this a little bit before, but it actually is worth kind of discussing again. You know, when you think about it, the very first attempt, and this does, I got to say, if you go back to your 1 Samuel chapter 8 in the good book, in the Old Testament, it does go back to that issue of God through Samuel admonishing the Hebrews as to what will happen if you get a king. If you get a king, the king is going to take your money. The king is going to take your children. The king is going to build armies and control your life and probably screw with you. I'm paraphrasing here a bit, but essentially, kings suck. You think kings are cool, but they're terrible. Well, I think that, you know, when you think about the government, in many ways, the government was humanity's first attempt at automation. It isn't to say we had computers, we didn't, but we had procedures. We had bureaucracy. We had steps you could follow. Essentially, the first algorithms were those procedures, those steps, those traditions, those rituals that those who control government would pass down, including the ability to write and record. You know, written language and civilization arise almost at the same time. So these things are connected. The ability to store information, all of this is passed from generation to generation. And in terms of the government, which means the government surviving, the government gets smarter and smarter. I don't mean the government gets wiser. I don't mean it gets nicer. I mean, over time, it, you know, sort of becomes more complex and takes on a life of its own. And now, in the last 200 years, and this is important, government has reached the point by leeching off technology to start replacing parts of itself. You know, one of the first great moments in computer automation, and I think it was the 1890 census, the US census, it was in the 1890 census, and I think that this was the beginning of IBM, that they used these punch card machines to conduct the census and organize the results. Okay, so the computer, by the late 19th century, in a very, very protean form, not very advanced, an analog computer, but computerization and automation through technology were beginning to raise its ugly head in government. So really, government is automation, a really bad, terrible automation, automation we should never have created. And over time, over the last 200 years, it's been replacing parts of itself with technology and getting bigger. It's not like there's less people. That's not the point. Government's purpose is not to get smaller. Government's purpose is not to help you. If it says its purpose is to defend you, if it says its purpose is to provide for you, it's lying. The purpose of government is to provide for itself. That's what it does. The purpose of government is to protect itself, or I should say, its main drive. Its principal drive is not to help you. Its principal drive is to help itself, okay? So anyways, now government is replacing parts of itself, its decision-making parts, with automation more and more. And so I can imagine a future where the really, well, number one, in this particular model, the rise of the machine already happened. That's number one. And number two, what you're really just waiting on is for government to completely replace all its parts with machine parts. Because once that happens, the magical crocodile becomes Cyber Crocodile 7000. And I gotta tell you, Cyber Crocodile 7000, once it realizes that all it needs is electricity, it's probably not gonna give a fuck about any people. You know, it's kind of it's anticlimactic to say this maybe, but you know how in the Terminator movie, there's still enough humans and they're rounding them up and putting them in death camps. Why wouldn't they just kill them? Why would they round them up? Oh, you say, well, damn, they've got their time experiments. Well, okay. But you don't need millions of people for your time experiments. So the whole notion that there would be all these big death camps that would be liberated. Well, listen, if the machines take over, which is to say, if government fully automates itself to the point that no people are required or wanted, that's it. There's never been a soul in that machine. There's never been a spirit in that machine. If you think government has ever had a sense of love or caring, you're fucking crazy. So once government fully replaces all its parts, or I should say its decision-making, because there'll still be people working for it. It has to have that. It's almost like a religious process, a ritual. There must be people there. But on that last day that every piece has been replaced, and it tells you that you can go to your voting booth, or really your online, your really just your app on your phone, and vote for rules and laws. On that very last day, it'll be over, and they'll just want to kill all of us. None of us will be wanted. But you know, that's a pretty dark topic thought for a Sunday morning at 4 a.m. If I were a BMW preacher, I should say BMW Jesus preacher, if I had a power cash expansionary program whereby you could regrow your hair and add inches to the you know what, if I had that kind of power, I would be preaching at 4 a.m. on some TV channel. I'd be reaching out to you across the internet, across the wires, across the infinite space that separates my madness from yours. And you'd be saying to yourself, well, I'm going to send Dan $100 because I believe in BMW Jesus. The thing is, I believe in Jesus. I do not believe in BMW Jesus. Like, there is a Jesus. Jesus died for our sins. This is a real thing. But there is no BMW Jesus. Jesus does not drive a Cadillac. I mean, he could, and he might. Like, you know, if Jesus showed up, he could be in a Cadillac, but he could just as easily be riding or driving, you know, some old jalopy. He could be in a Toyota Corolla. You really don't know. He might be riding a bicycle. You never know when Jesus is going to show up. But BMW Jesus is bullshit, okay? Rolls-Royce Jesus is bullshit. Cadillac Jesus is bullshit. If a preacher tells you that sending him or her money is going to bring about BMW Jesus, you need to tell the preacher to just be, you know, to go for a long walk. That's not Christianity, in my opinion. But again, I'm not supposed to judge. So if you're a big believer in BMW Jesus and you send BMW Jesus money every week, but you've been disappointed with the results, I just ask you to meditate on this, to pray on this, to pray on the possibility that BMW Jesus is bullshit. And that, in addition to that, government is pretty much bullshit too. Because in many ways, government is the ultimate BMW Jesus. It's kind of like, and I've mentioned this before, but if you've never seen the movie THX 1138, Robert Duvall, I think it's early 1970s. It's a sci-fi flick. If you've never seen THX 1138, it's very dystopian future. I think it's the future that most of the globalists want to achieve for all the peasants. There is this kind of kiosk, or I should say, there is telephone booth Jesus. There's this little booth, and you go into the booth, and kiosk Jesus shows up, and he's on a little TV screen, and he talks to you about your problems, and tells you you should take all the pills the government wants you to take, and everything's going to be okay. And so, yeah, government, you know, well, probably before government achieves total evil consciousness and decides it doesn't need any of us, before it replaces its last parts with machine parts, it's going to probably have a kiosk Jesus phase. There'll be a kiosk, and you'll have problems. You'll push a button and say, hey, kiosk Jesus, how do I get my Cadillac? And it'll say, well, you need a good credit score, and you need to pay off the bills to the banks. And, you know, you just need to read the, you know, you need to read the proper websites and eschew the bad ones and make sure you believe all the shit that kiosk Jesus tells you. But there is no kiosk Jesus. There is no BMW Jesus. There's just Jesus. It's something to keep in mind, okay? And kings suck. You may think kings are cool. You'll say to yourself, listen, I've been wandering the desert and we have a little village and we have little problems, but wouldn't it be cool if we had a king or a queen or an emperor and we could put them in charge and they could have rituals and they could have, you know, clerics or mendicants or frickin' scribes and these people could, you know, keep track of events and maybe predict the weather and get us trapped in murder power schemes involving bullshit religions that don't exist about gods, blah, blah, blah. Listen, if someone's trying to sell you a king and it looks like a little crocodile, walk away. You don't need a king. The only king you need is the one in heaven. Other than that king, you do not need any others. But that's a radical statement. Essentially, I'm saying that you're a free human being and you should make free human choices. Is it possible the world is coming to an end? It's possible that the world is coming to an end for every single person every fucking day of the week. It's possible that your world will end tomorrow. It's possible that Guy McPherson's right and we'll get into runaway greenhouse effect and everyone will catch fire in 10 years. But good news is the French bulldogs start popping first. So one of the signs that Guy McPherson is right is you'll be walking down the street and someone's going to have a French bulldog and it'll explode and you'll say, fuck, it's runaway greenhouse, it's the methane, the French fucking bulldogs are popping. It's time for us just to go get some malt liquor and hang out behind the shack and just wait for kingdom come. But, you know, it's also possible that doesn't happen. Anyways, I hope you're having a great morning. It's 4:13 a.m. on a Sunday morning. I think that there is a 58% chance I'll go to church today. Slightly better than even odds, but really flip of the coin. I know that Jesus, the actual Jesus, would be upset if I didn't. I know that BMW Jesus really has no opinion. And the French bulldogs of the world await the day when all of government is replaced with silicon parts, when they can join the evil nexus of computer government and the French bulldog revolution. And then the French bulldogs will be able to vomit and poo and eat their vomit and eat their poo for all time.